for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts.
Welcome into News for Utah Plus. I am Lindsay Ehrts. Thanks for joining us today. We're glad you found us on our new TV streaming app. We hope you share it with your friends. We're also on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, X.
Everywhere.
All the things. We are everywhere. Joining me today, a couple of political analysts, Taylor Morgan, Thea Murray. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
How are ya?
It is the day after Election Day.
Best day of the year.
We are recording the day after Election Day, which, like, I take a big sigh after Election Day. It's like, things are settled. No more equal airtime. Like, no more things we have to worry about, right? So that is going to be largely our discussion today, is who's up and who's down in the world of both local and national elections. So let's dive right in, shall we? Let me get your take, guys. What races were you watching? What were you looking for? We had dozens and dozens, hundreds even, local municipal races. So what caught your attention?
I think locally here, close to home, I think I'm watching the Sandy City mayor's race. I'm also watching the mayor's race in Provo City with eight-year incumbent Michelle Cafusi running a very tight race against a former lawmaker, Marsha Judkins. That's a really close race. That has not been called yet. I'm also watching the general dysfunction of Aaron Davidson, the Utah County Clerk, to see how that impacts that race in Provo.
Well, we did talk to him, so let me just be clear.
Perfect.
Our station talked to him. He said they have about 40,000 outstanding ballots at this moment.
40,000.
40,000.
It's a lot of outstanding ballots.
It is. Let me put that in context a little bit. Salt Lake County tells me they have 59,000 that they're still processing, but they say like more than half of those, 33,000, came to drop boxes just last night.
Yeah.
So they got those at the very last minute last night.
And I want to say that is a win. To give a little credit to Salt Lake County for communicating that to voters, this was a law change that was in effect this cycle, right? That you had to have your ballot be in hand by the county clerk by Election Day, not just have it be postmarked. And so I'm really encouraged to know that the Salt Lake County clerk received so many ballots at ballot drop boxes or turned in person yesterday on Election Day.
Yeah.
Because that means their efforts to communicate with the voters, educate the voters, are working. That's good.
Do you think that law change impacted turnout in any sort of way? Because the fear was, right, that if you have to have your ballot in by 8 p.m., you can't just put it in the mail and hope it gets there. It could have depressed turnout a little bit. What do you think?
I think this is a really hard election, Lindsay, to like talk about that, right? So I think turnout right now is up. So if you were asking, I'll just answer your earlier question, then I'll loop back around to what you just asked. Weber County is looking to have higher turnout than it usually does in a municipal election. So usually when we talk about municipal election cycles, we're talking low 30% turnout. Yeah. So I want to just be clear, it's the wrong election for the test, you know what I mean, of the
that's
new law,
point.
Right?
Yeah,
so not everyone's tracking this election. Most people don't even know there are municipal elections. Some cities didn't even hold an election because they didn't have people competing in them. We need to compare it apple to apple, right? So we need presidential election turnout to presidential election turnout with this new rule before I would want to say something.
But we also have a lot of cycles
for the cough there. Can I add one
happens.
Thing there,
yes.
too? We need to be looking at return rate of ballots that were mailed out. I think that's a really important point that Leah just made, is not every city in Utah has elections this cycle.
That's true.
And so we should not be comparing ballots submitted in terms of overall active registered voters. We should be looking at the return percentage of ballots that were sent out by mail.
Right. And I'm not sure that's how the counties or the LG reports that.
That's
right.
Exactly
so the
right.
denominator is going to be the wrong denominator.
That's exactly,
right.
yeah. And that's why I had to be so rude and make sure I made that point. Sorry about that, Lindsay.
Very rude. My name is on this show.
That's true.
I'm totally kidding. Taylor thinks it's his show. Okay, so you said Sandy and Provo, some of the races you're watching. Leah, up in your neck of the woods in Weber County, they had an incorporated race in Ogden Valley that there was nobody elected. They were making their government in this election.
Yeah, no, this is my favorite thing to watch. Ogden Valley City became a city last year. So this year they were electing all of their government all at the same time. And I'm going to tell you, I was tracking because I'm a nerd. So our county clerk, Ricky Hatch, posting on the Facebook page, what is the turnout? So I don't know final numbers because like you just said with Utah County, they don't have 40,000 ballots, but I think they were telling me this morning 7,000 ballots they were still looking at. Anyway, so I'm looking at voter turnout as of yesterday, and the Ogden Valley city race had like high 40s.
Yeah.
So what I just told you before, like municipal elections are usually 31%. Weber County's thinking they're going to report like a 38, 37, 39% turnout when it's all done. I asked them, is that because Ogden Valley City was so exciting? And they're like, yeah, it's kind of driving voter turnout in the county. And they approached presidential levels or midterm levels of turnout. But I also want to say this, right? One, it's a nonpartisan race. So I don't know the party queue. Ogden Valley, I don't know the people. Does that make sense? Yeah. I'm not really sure if I can say to you, oh, this is part of Democrats doing really well. And because it's new and all the players are kind of new, a little bit I can't even say to you, because so-and-so was elected, this is what's happening there. Mm. So I was watching it to see were they interested. They clearly were. They all, not all of them, but half of them showed up to vote. And then it'll be interesting to see what names these people make for themselves going forward.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I will tell you, I was watching Ogden City. So if we could pivot to a conversation we had last week or just pull that thread from last week, Ogden City had three competitive seats where the Weber County Democrats sent a party queue. So you might remember last week we talked about Utah County Republicans sending a party queue. And the candidates that got that party queue text, meaning people were told this is who the Democrats like in Ogden City, those candidates are leading in the election and two of them are challengers. So it looks like incumbents are going to lose in Ogden City. I was not expecting that, right? So I was watching Ogden Valley because I thought that was just super cool, new city. And then looking at the returns for Ogden City, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. We've got incumbents that are losing. We've got Party Q having Democrats win with a very visible Party Q up in Ogden City, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Okay, so back to the Utah County races. That Provo race is really interesting to me because Michelle Cafusi is trying to keep her seat for a third term, right? She's trying to run for a third term. Taylor, do you see that race with former state lawmaker Marsha Judkins? Do you see that? We overuse this term, but as a referendum on Michelle Cafusi and sort of she's been in office for two terms now. Do Provo residents want to switch that up?
I mean, generally, incumbents are trusted. Incumbents are well-liked, barring the rare instance of a scandal or a really unpopular incumbent who has just not been accountable or responsive, I think, to voters. Generally, especially in mayoral municipal races, incumbents do well. Now, I think Leah brings up a really interesting example of what's happening in Ogden, where we have a political party actually organizing against incumbents. I think that's an interesting development there. That could be another example of you know, kind of when this doesn't happen, when an incumbent is not assured re-election. I think Michelle Cafusi has really high name ID. That matters in a municipal, but when you're running against someone that also has really high name ID, you know, Marsha Judkins is well known in the community. She's well liked. She had really high approval as a legislator from the area, and it's name ID against name ID, strength on strength there. And ultimately, I think it's just going to come down to who was better organized, who ran the better ground game.
Leah, did you want to add to that? Or
yeah, I guess I wanted to say I'm not sure which variable is the correct variable, right? So yeah. I don't know if it's the party organizing. I don't know if it is, man, maybe this was not a great night for incumbents across the board.
That's a good point.
Right,
yeah.
Which would indicate being in a record government shutdown, which we are at the moment that we are recording this, maybe people are beginning to feel those feels. And even though you wouldn't blame a Provo mayor, right, or an Orem mayor, or an Ogden City council person for what's happening at the federal level, I might blame, I'm feeling it. Does that make sense?
They're just like change.
Yeah, you change. And all these incumbents got to go. And I do feel like challengers were doing well across the board in the state of Utah.
Yeah, and we'll see how this shakes out as well in Sandy. That is a huge mayoral election there in Sandy City. Of course, Monica Zoltansky up against Cindy Sharkey. Cindy Sharkey is essentially known as the more conservative Republican favored candidate in that race.
Well, she's got a great name.
Well,
so, like, how do you compete with the shark sign?
I'll tell you what, driving through Sandy City right now, it is nothing but shark and red hat signs competing. Yeah. And this is an example of where I might tell candidates of either of these very talented, strong candidates in this race, if either of them came to me, I would say, maybe a little less money on the fancy signs, maybe a little more money on voter outreach.
There we go. All right. What do you make of the Riverton race? We had a Riverton mayor's race, I should say. Tawny McKay is the wife of State Senator Dan McKay running against Tish Barroker. They are two, you know, longtime city council women who know the city, have worked in the city very a long time. But Tish is really, for lack of a better word, creaming Tawny McKay. What do you make of that race?
It's not close. And it also is a reflection of what happened in the primary in this race. Councilwoman McKay did not perform very well in the primary election. She did come in second place there, a distant second place in the primary to get to this general election, but has not picked up more support now versus the primary. So there's been a lot of drama in Riverton, and I do not care enough about it, know enough to speak about it on this show. But I will say that things got a little bit messy on a personal level there. With Tawny McKay and some other members of the Riverton City Council, even family of current state legislators. So I will say, well, I guess Tawny is as well, of course, with Senator Dan McKay. I think this election got too messy. It got a little too personal. And I think maybe more time was spent on passive-aggressive Facebook posts, and it should have been spent on campaigning to voters.
Anything else you guys want to add about local elections that we didn't talk about, or just overall general themes that you saw from last night's results? We sort of talked about incumbents. Yeah, we'll go to that. Okay. I just want to make sure you said everything you wanted to say.
Yeah.
Okay, about local races. So
I do just want to call out one to our voters, well, not our voters, our viewers real quick, is that if you're looking for tight races to keep an eye on throughout the state, Park City Mayor is currently separated by just two votes.
Two votes.
Wow.
So if you are ever one of those people who stays home on a municipal election day, thinking your vote doesn't matter, two votes.
And I'll tell you what, it is a lot worse for a candidate and for a campaign to lose by a very tight margin than to be blown out.
That's just like
I would
your
much rather
cousin.
Be blown
like,
out
why
every
didn't
time.
Your cousin vote?
Yeah. Like, we were saying you're going through your contacts and your phone. Like, did you vote?
It's kind of like the Utah BYU game. Just kick the field goal, right? Come on.
I love it. Okay, so moving nationally, New York City's mayor's race was really the one I think the nation was watching. This was Iran Mondami, self-described Democratic Socialist against Andrew Cuomo, the two main candidates. There was a Republican in there, too. Cuomo obviously lost in the primary, decided to run as an independent. What does this say about Trump in this race? What does this say about, you know, Democrats as they kind of got walloped in the 2024 election? Have they come back? What do you guys see from what happened in New York City?
I think we need to call a big timeout with the National Democrats. We need to huddle up, take a knee, and we need
kick
to make
the field
this.
Goal.
We need to make, well, that too. Yeah. But no, we need to make it abundantly clear, Democrats, that you have a blueprint. No pun intended, but that was a pretty good one.
There you go.
Yeah.
You have a clear blueprint in this election. What happened yesterday in these elections is a clear guide for you in how to win the midterm next year.
Explain that. What do you mean by the clear guide? What's the guide?
In New York City, for example, the Democratic Socialist is barely hanging on to win, right? However, in New Jersey, in Virginia, we see the moderate Democrats, and in Georgia as well. What's happening in Georgia is a huge, huge deal. We'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
But the centrist, moderate Democrats in those states who are focused on the economy are winning big. That is the path. That is what you need to do. You need to replicate that, Democrats.
Yeah, I guess I would just add, oh, I'm so sorry.
No, Lindsay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Mondani won 50%. I want to be clear. Like, it's Andrew Cuomo who's a Democrat. It's Mondani who's a Democrat. The Republican.
Democratic Socialist.
Right, but the Republican they ran got 7% of the vote. Yeah. So, like, it's.
That is New York City.
Right, it is a New York City, and he got 50%. Yeah. So there's probably no more liberal like city, maybe on the planet. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, so New York City, if you were going to have this kind of Mondani message, if this is the future of the party and New York City didn't buy it, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, not only that, but it's also a ranked choice voting election.
Right.
Right. And so my sense is that that even further hits home this example of moderation, Democrats, and being in the center, especially on economic issues, that is the winning message.
Yeah, the message during the 2024 election seemed to really be democracy is at stake. Our country is going to fall apart if Donald Trump gets elected. Yeah. That didn't seem to resonate with voters.
It did not.
As evidenced by the White House, the House and the Senate right now.
You have to have exciting candidates who are talking about the economy. You cannot be running everyone against Donald Trump. That will not work, right? you have to have Democrats that are running on issues, mostly the economy, that are running for themselves and for their priorities, not just against the White House.
Leah, do you see this carrying to the 2026 midterms? I've heard some talk about that, too, that this is sort of, again, we overuse this term, the bellwether for the midterms. Do you see it that way?
I mean, I think, yes, in the fact that it's the most recent election, right? So when you're thinking about the two teams and how they are doing, the most recent election, excuse me, the Democrats did well. So if you're the Democratic Party, you're like, were BYU in that story? I don't know. Right? Like, so, like, but the answer is
they're blue.
We just did really well.
Yeah.
We
I'm
just
not sure
won.
How they would feel about that. Well,
like, so we're the most recent winner. And a little bit, so we're picking on New York City, if you don't mind. I want to go to, like, Georgia.
Yes.
They are Democratic nominees for a Georgia Utility Regulation Board, won their seats. I don't even know in anyone in this building's lifetime that there's been a Democrat who won that seat. So what I thought was really interesting, and I'm pulling this
from... I mean, I feel like a Utility Regulation Board is something only a Democrat would run for.
Maybe, no? But
because
let's just...
Because it's regulation.
Yeah,
see,
but I
want to
just... No, but Republicans have won forever. And I just want to kind of say...
Okay, Georgia's historically red is what she's
saying. Right, right.
Oh,
and so Matt Iglesias, I was reading his Substack today, and he said, this election in Georgia, super obscure, low turnout... So Democrats dominating when low propensity voters are staying home.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I want to just kind of go, what does that mean for a midterm when we don't get the highest turnout? It has always been conventional wisdom that Republicans do better if voter turnout is lower and Democrats do better when it's higher. I don't think that's been true for years.
Exactly right.
Right. Yeah. And so this to me in Georgia, which seems so obscure, like it's a utility, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
But the fact is that it was obscure, didn't get high turnout, and the Democrats dominated, like they crushed. Yeah. So one, that's great for the party, but also I think for me, when you ask, what does it signal for midterm, which will be the next election where we don't get high turnout.
Right. Those low propensity voters will stay home. Again.
That's right. So I think Democrats, so that for me is a sign that Democrats will do well next year.
So Democrats need to lean into the high turnout voters. They need to lean into these issues like the economy and away from just populist anti-Donald Trump rhetoric, I think.
It's the economy, stupid. Peter, go.
Slotting in a little bit, quick bit of context on this Public Service Commission race. Per The Hill, the last time Democrats have won this race was the year 2000.
Wow.
Which would also line up with the last time Democrats were really competitive for statewide office in Georgia. Yeah. You think Governor Zell Miller, other names like that.
Peter, you're from Georgia. Do you have any thoughts you want to share here from your home state?
All of my friends who are still reporters back there were losing their minds.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot underscore not only the extent to which this was a surprise, but how well they performed. You had some of these rural Georgia counties that you saw these Public Service Commission candidates outrunning Kamala Harris's margin by 25 to 30 points.
That's so significant.
It was a staggering flip. And you know, we have two Democratic senators from Georgia right now, but within the state, I mean, governor's been locked up. All these other statewide offices have not really been a target for the party in this kind of sense. So to see that it blew a lot of minds.
My parents actually live in Georgia in Greensboro, and when I drive out there, it does not feel like a Democratic area.
No.
Let's just put it that way.
Well, and so for some context, right? I grew up in Forsyth County, Georgia. It's north of Atlanta. It's a Trump stronghold. I believe it was plus 33 for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. There's a 20-point shift in wealthy suburban Forsyth County. I think Democrats need to capture lightning in a bottle in Georgia. I don't know
if
what
Democrats
other message
do
they
not
from
win.
This.
In the midterms, in resounding fashion, they will have lost the midterm.
Yeah.
It is essentially their game to win. They have everything going for them right now in terms of the political trends.
I mean, they won about everything they could.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, want to move to California, opposite coast, Prop 50. That was their redistricting plan to counter Texas's redistricting plan. Trump kind of got involved there, wanted Texas to pick up.
What did
up.
The League of Women Voters have to say about that in California? Anybody know?
I don't know. I haven't asked them about it. But
guess
they
what? They didn't oppose it.
They're on my show this week.
You
so why
them,
don't
please.
I ask them how
ask
they
them.
Feel about Prop 50? Obviously, we know how Taylor feels about Prop 50, but it passed, meaning Democrats could have a chance here to pick up some seats in Congress if California redistricts. I think there's a lawsuit over it. We'll see where it goes. But Taylor, what do you make of the win?
The biggest problem with Prop 50 is that there are 49 other props before it. And this is a great example of why direct democracy is a problem, especially in California.
California is an initiative state, for sure. Leah, what do you make of it?
Yeah, no, I think what's interesting, I think, about Prop 50 is early people were saying they didn't like it, and then it passed, which to the conversations we're always having means democratic messaging can work. So even if you've got an idea that's unpopular, if you actually do a good job on messaging, and the way Gavin Newsom, so I don't know.
Hey.
Right, just like I'm just gonna be like,
in all caps is what's getting it for me.
Right, it's like, but like a little bit, typing. You're kind of like watching that and going, okay, yeah. Maybe they
got
have
a great head of hair. Yeah, like, I'm just saying, they might... I got one word, presidential.
Oh, right, yeah. Wow. But the point, like, they might be, how do I say, doing, capture. How did you say, Peter? Capturing lightning in a bottle, but also figuring out how to hold the bottle. Yeah. Right, like, so the answer is, how do we message? How do we talk to voters?
I saw a commentator say something to the effect of Democrats need to figure out how to have an off-cycle presidential election.
That's a great, I like
that. Don't know how they do that at this point. But another point on Prop 50 I just want to make, Orange County, California, stronghold of SoCal conservatism, mm-hmm. Prop 50 won by like 10 points.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing was just messaged really well and got across the finish. I think that we projected this thing as it's done within like 5 minutes of polls closing.
I don't know though, but when does it end? Like if California is going to be more Democratic and then Texas is going to be more Republican, we've got our own battle here. Like when does the redistricting battle end? Because we will forever be changing our maps.
It's complicated. This is not a comprehensive answer, but I think ultimately Democrats have got to move beyond the gimmicks and the games of not being a political party. And especially here in Utah, I would point that out. You know, rather than creating and spinning up new nonprofit organizations, rather than abandoning your Democratic Party here in the state and just letting it essentially wither on the vine, Democrats, not just here, but elsewhere, need to get away from these, blanket open primary, the jungle primary, all these, you know, whether it's ranked choice voting or other methods. We just need to lean into our political parties. Our parties have got to embrace everyday Americans and have to welcome centrists rather than pushing them away. We have to take back our two-party system, and our parties have to own up to it and start winning in it.
It's very soapboxy.
High-level soapboxy.
No, I like it.
That's my strong reaction today. Yeah. And I'm hopeful for Democrats. I really am. Leah. We need the choice for voters.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think your question is, when does it end?
Yeah.
And the answer is it never has to. So to a certain extent, state legislatures just have to get a little exhausted about constantly having this conversation. So if you ask state legislators, like, what do they have coming up this session in Utah? And they really probably don't want to be talking about the districts they wrote 5 years ago, right? So a little bit, I think, where it stops might be in just there's less energy for it.
Yeah.
Maybe, and I know we're out of time. This is Taylor's last tip,
okay,
my last soapbox of the
Taylor
day.
Taylor's soapbox.
Okay, plaintiffs here in Utah. Okay. Map C's a winner. It's great. Ben McAdams is going to get into Congress if you keep that map.
He'll be on my show in a week
and a half. So let's stop the litigation. Let's stop the motions. Just go with Map C, right, and move on and get Ben McAdams elected.
You want them to withdraw everything right now?
I want them to agree with what the legislature has passed rather than fighting it with more legal motions.
Okay. We're like this close to a decision here. Like Monday, we'll get a decision.
It could all be so easy.
Okay, we will see. Leah, any final thoughts before I let you go?
No, I mean, I do feel great night for Democrats.
Interesting. She says as she laughs at Taylor.
Hey, no.
She just looked at you and just like smirked.
Absolutely. Great night. Congratulations, Dems. But let's see if you do it when it matters.
Okay, there we go. All right. Thank you all for being here. We appreciate you being here. Producer Peter, we appreciate you too.
Happy to be here.
Make sure you tell your friends about the News for Utah Plus app on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire. Of course, you can watch Inside Utah Politics. I will have the League of Women Voters this Sunday at 8 and 4. Next week, I will have Ben McAdams, so we will talk to him about his future
plans.
You
are getting all the interviews that matter, Lindsay Ertz.
My name's on a show.
Oh, that's right.
We're putting that in really, the ad. Lindsay Ertz gets all the interviews that matter.
It's a really bad font, but it's on the show. It's very good.
No comment.
All right. We will see you next time.